Do you see, Chief? I'll tell you what happened, Chief. Everything was going okay, Chief, you see, when... Well, you see, Chief... Now, come on, Chief, listen to me, will you? Now, look, I'm not alibiing, Chief. Well, look, Chief, what happened, see? Well, you see, I was going right. I was going to my right, see? You got it, Chief? When now? Well, Chief... Now, listen, Chief, the wind... Chief, the sun got my eyes. I'll tell you, the sun got my eyes. Now, look, Chief. No, not Buffalo. Oh, Chief, no. Bring it up there, Chief. Bring it up. And for all of you out there who have been looking for the universal alibi ever since you sprang into this veil of tears, you've tuned to the right channel. This is the moment when you're liable to get the universal solvent that will let you out of all those problems. It's the Alibi Hour. Hello, Gibby. Hello, Staten Island. Are you still shipping water over there? Bring it up. Oh, Darien, oh, what a pit of hotbed, rotten, sinful mediocrity. Bring it up. Westport wallowing in Westport. Oh, right up. How are you, T-Neck? Oh, you old slob. Oh, Philadelphia sitting out there stewing in its own juice. Some mornings you wake up and you look in the mirror and you just know it's a cute day. You just know you're very cute on that morning. You just know. And 10 minutes later, you're standing. Hey, come on, watch me, Tony. 10 minutes later, I told you to watch me. 10 minutes later, you're standing in front of the mirror, and you're singing it out. And you know it's one of them days where you're singing good. Boy, you're laying it out. Rasmataz and Rooty-Toot-Toot. On the cheek, on the cheek of beer routine. Rasmataz, Rooty-Toot, for your love belongs to me. At night, when you're asleep, oh baby, into your tent I'll creep, creep, creepy, creep. The stars that shine above will light our way to lovey dove, love, love. You rule this old land with me, baby. I'm the chic, chic, chic of Arabi. Rasmataz, Rooty-Toot, bring it up there on the cute day. I'm the sheik of Araby. Bow, bow, your love belongs to me. Ba-ba-do, ba-ba-da, that night, at night, when you're asleep. Ba-ba-da-ba, into your tent, I'll creep, 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 creep. The stars that shine above, oh, my light heart, with your love, love, love. Ba-ba-da-da-do, ba-ba-ba-da, ba. Tell you, there are times when you wake up and you know you are on. You just know you are on. And you look into that old mirror, you know, and you flutter your jowls a little bit, and you scrape your teeth, and you spit a little bit, and you know that the juices are flowing and the glands are moving in the right direction. The sap is coming up through the veins. Now, don't chicken out with me in there, Tony. For those of you out there, what do I want? No. I'll tell you when I want stars and stripes. Don't make an automatic change. You just keep chic up, and when I call for stars and stripes, I'll call for stars and stripes. Do not ever inflict stars and stripes on me unwittingly. you know, I'll tell you, it's a funny thing.
You know, there are times when you do. You just feel like this. By the way, this program is dedicated to all you Carlton Fredericks fans out there. You Blackstrap molasses nuts. And now, this isn't Blackstrap. He's always on. It's vitamin E addicts out there. Those of you who are mainlining vitamin E, we're going to dedicate this to you because you must wake up every morning with the spring in your step, yelling and hollering and spitting and snorting. And it's like my old man used to say. He'd get up in the morning, you know. Of course, you see, we all come out of that basic animal background. No question about it. We are an animal. We are not an abstraction. We are an animal. We sweat. And our knees crack. And, it's all there. The same thing happens with tigers and lions and turtles. And my old man used to get up in the morning. Not many of us today do realize. I suspect one of the things wrong with many kids of now is that the kids are raised almost in abstraction. In short, many kids don't even see real people. They see camp counselors. They do. They're not real people. No kids. A camp counselor is not a real man. He winds up. And it's a very different kind of lady that they didn't know. They can't. Now, cheers, when it's time for Leathercraft Hour. That's not exactly the way my Aunt Min used to talk about her false teeth. And so I think large numbers of kids from about the time they're six, Tony, I would say, are put into a kind of limbo, a limbo world, you know? They go to boarding school. Now, those are not real people either. They're kids at boarding school. Those are teachers. That's a very different process. They are teachers. They are advisors. Then in the summertime, it's off to Campsville. Well, this goes on until the guy is about 18 years old, and then the next thing you know, he's off to Princeton. That ain't a real world either, kid. And so eventually, by the time the guy is a junior in Princeton, he is ready to go marching off into all kinds of realms of unreality. Holy smokes, I've never heard more unreality than any given 5 minutes of any given teach-in. And, of course, you take a teacher who's been sitting on his thing, you know, at Princeton or Harvard for the last 150 years, and a kid who's been sitting on his thing since he was 8 years old, naturally, you got the Land of Oz going full blast. Full B-L-A-S-T, full blast. Now, I'll tell you, most kids, they don't have much contact with real people, and the only contact they have with a real person is themselves. And, of course, the kid wakes up, he's sweating, he's got a headache, he doesn't care about Vietnam, he doesn't care about Joan Baez or anything. He thinks he's sick because all the other non-real people around him are, you know, talking about this kind of stuff. So he sits in his room, and he says, oh, what's the matter with me? Look at me. Holy smokes, I got skin trouble. That's what's worrying me. It's not the civil rights problem that's worrying me. It's this pimple. Gee whiz, wow. And he begins to feel very unworthy, very, very unworthy. Now, if he had grown up in an area around which were real people, you know, like if he had a father and a mother type, you know, and, I mean, that were real people, he would be a very different kind. Like, for example, my old man used to get up in the morning and I would hear him, see, I'd be in the next room, I'd be dressing or something, and he would go rushing into the bathroom and you'd hear the water go, and you'd hear, he's coughing, you see, he's blowing it out. He's he's clearing out the pipes. No, I'm telling you exactly what would happen. You go, and that's the morning sound of a real person, you see, cleaning out the pipes and getting ready for the day's battle. And he's in there sucking like mad on the first cigarette. He's going, you can hear him in there. And the instant he's got this one sucked right down to a nub, all the while he's brushing his teeth, you hear him lighten one from the other end. And then once in a while, he'd say, you'd hear him out, good spit's good for you in the morning. Pow! Well, now, I grew up, it wasn't that my father was a slob. Not at all. Well, of course, you know, let's face it. Now, let us define slobbery. What is a slob? Seriously, friends, what is a slob? Is a slob a guy that snaps the garters on his socks? Or is a slob a guy who goes, what a wonderful evening we had last night with Barbara Streisand? Which is a slob? Very hard. Not easy to determine. Oh, today's hero is tomorrow's klutz. And today's great idea is tomorrow's buffoonery. And today's buffoonery is tomorrow's genius. So be careful, kid. Be careful, kid. Bring it up there all together now. Let's all sing it all together now. I got some great lyrics that I cannot sing on the air to this one. Oh, I'm the shaker. I'm the shaker. What's the matter, Tony? You look unhappy today. What's the matter, Tony? Are you catching it from Ralph? Huh? I think he is. What's the matter, Tony? Don't you love us today? That's what I thought. Well, that's what happens when you start to move forward in the world. Your old friends peel off. You know, speaking of old friends, you got the button in there? Yes, you better press the money button, please. Hit it. There we go.
Ready to try a great fresh taste?
Newport tastes fresher, tastes better too.
Newport tastes fresher, tastes better too.
Newport tastes fresher,
tastes better too.
Than any other menthol cigarette.
If you're ready to try a great fresh taste, try Newport menthol cigarettes. Newport tastes fresher and tastes better than any other menthol cigarette. A blend of great-tasting tobaccos, white filter, and mild, natural menthol.
Newport tastes fresher,
tastes better too, than any other menthol cigarette.
Oh, gee, that was so nice. Well, it was. Those people are concerned about you. They want you to smoke the right cigarette. Guess what? Oh, yeah. Did you read the... Speaking of advertisements. Well, the ad world, you know. It's hard to tell where the ad world and the showbiz world stop. You know, where one merges into the other. In fact, they're becoming very much part and parcel of the same thing. And the other day, I am reading in one of the big ad journals. You know, are you aware that they even have a trade journal for ad people? For those of you who don't know about it, it's better than Mad Magazine, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, it starts and stops, and it doesn't just, it's a bop a minute. And it tells about this one guy who during his practical week, this is the way the article said, I'm quoting, it says, during his practical time, he works at a big ad agency on Manhattan's Madison Avenue. And, of course, he's right in there swinging, right in the pickle commercials. And he's knocking down with all that stuff about, you know, how much better, how the roses are going to come to your cheeks when you start smoking regularly the right cigarette. Oh, wow. And he's writing. Yeah, he is. He's writing all these things. And what do you think he does on Sunday? Well, he's a very famous minister on Sunday. And on Sunday, he mounts the pulpit, and he says in his little blurb there, it talks about him, he says, well, I believe that the ad people and the ministry have a lot in common. They're both in communications. And I carry over a lot of my own techniques from the agency. I carry them over into spreading the light. I presume he's got slogans, and I imagine they have a little choir that sings the 60-second spot there in the middle of the commercial, like, you love God. You love God, razzmatazz, God loves you, rooty tooty toot. And he said, oh, it's beginning to, have you heard any of those commercials? They don't play them in New York. But I'll tell you, I was up in Maine one day, and I heard one of these commercials. I couldn't believe they had it on the air. It just came on. You could hear this choir. It wasn't really a choir. It sounded like a combination of the Beatles, the Andrews Sisters, and the Mormon Choir. It's a very peculiar combination. You know, they were kind of walk right down that line there. It's very hard today to be off any given line. Walking along the line there, and I could hear them singing, and they're singing, go to church, boing, 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 go to church, go to church this Sunday, and on came this, and then the guy comes on, he says, hello, Charlie, what are you doing today? And Charlie says, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, I'm just distracted. I don't know what it is. I got my foot cut in a lawnmower, and oh, my boss is yelling and hollering at me, and oh, everything's going to hell. That's what it's doing. I just, don't bother me, Fred. Well, Charlie, have you tried your local neighborhood friendly, reliable, industrious church? Satisfaction is guaranteed down there, you know. Huh. What do you mean? Well, why don't you come with me, and together we will go, and we will investigate this new way to peace and happiness. Let's go. Go to church. Go to church. Razzmatazz. Go to church. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Satisfaction guaranteed. And now let's get back to the top 30. That's just exactly the way it went. Holy smokeroonies. Great Scotterini. They were selling, that's all right, hon, I know where I am. They were selling that the same way, that this outfit sells that wild toothpaste. Speaking of, you got the wild toothpaste thing in there? Replace the words? Right here, just replace the word McLean with Sunday school and you got it.
Here's Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto for McLean's.
It's McLean's, the toothpaste that cleans with a new kind of taste that's wild. What a taste, what a thing. When you smile, all the bells will ring. Get 'em white, start tonight with McLean's. Taste the difference, try new McLean's, you go.
You still using that sweet kid stuff? Try the new toothpaste that gets teeth irresistibly white. You can actually feel McLean's whitening. Your whole mouth feels refreshed and invigorated.
Get them white, start tonight with McLean's. Taste the difference, try new McLean's, you go. Taste the difference, try new McLean's, you go.
Yes, friends, McLean's is a sexual experience. So, that's what you're looking for, isn't it? All of you out there? All of you children of Freud? You're looking for kicks. Have you noticed that she says, yes, you can actually feel your teeth whitening. Yes. Yes, you can feel your teeth whitening. Like it's a gash, you know? I can see a guy in there. Can you imagine this 12-year-old kid getting all McLeaned up? And the mother comes in, and there he is. He's out on the floor, gassed to the ears, and seven empty tubes of McLean's all squeezed all over the floor next to him. Please, Tony, another one. You got another one in there for us?
Oh. Is your car old enough to smoke? Surprising how many cars are. Is your car old enough to smoke? Surprising how many cars are.
Is your car a big smoker? Get Prestone Oil Miser and curb its appetite. Prestone Oil Miser is just what the name says. A miser for saving oil in any car. On sale wherever auto supplies are sold. Added to your regular oil, Prestone Oil Miser stops oil burning, restores lost power. Insist on Prestone Oil Miser, a brand name you know, a brand name you can trust. Get a can of Prestone Oil Miser today and start saving oil.
If your car's old enough to smoke,
surprising how many cars are.
If your car's old enough to smoke,
get Prestone Oil Miser.
That's wiser by far.
Prestone Oil Miser is a product of Union Carbide.
Yes, indeed. My Ford smokes Newports. What do you got there? Okay, very good. Speaking of misers, this is WOR, AM and FM New York. And we'll be here for a while. You know, George, you don't know how true that is, Dad. You should hear him. Wouldn't you like to work, one of you guys, just like to work at one place once where they say, look, fella, just don't worry about it. Money is no object. Just once. Just once I'd like to work in a place where they say, look, the object is to get the job done right. The object is to go all the way. Money is no object. Forget it. The only time I've ever been involved in anything like that, where it was really sickening, it was fantastically sickening, incredible. The only place where this happens is in these giant fiascos that you see on Broadway, where they really do say money is no object. And it's sickening when you're actually around it to see what actually happens with money when it's no object. They wind up getting $17,000 sequin gowns, which are never used in the scene, you know, that kind of thing. And ever since I have been in radio and television, ever since I've worked in the whole, this whole area of what is euphemistically called, by the way, that's the new word. Do you know that no ad agency ever now today admits that it's in the business of selling? It calls itself in the business of, guess what? Where's my kazoo here? It's good to blow it up. And practice. It says, we are in the business of communication. See, communication is a good word. Selling is a bad word. So no ad agents. Oh, no, they do. They think themselves in the communication industry. And they're communicating the idea that you better get on the stick right now and buy this, you know, whatever the jazz is that they're foisting off on the public at this given moment. Speaking of foisting it off, how many of you, you know, it's funny, have you noticed that we will pass through periods of giant discovery where there is a new discovery and everybody's all excited about it and they're yelling about it. There are 14,000 ads about it. And it's as though at last mankind has broken into the light. You know, at last we have broken out of the dark ages and we have torn aside the curtain of ignorance and we have moved into a bright new world with the banners flying and the band playing and the people cheering and yelling and people are marching forward at long last into true civilization. You remember when they said, yes, at long last, the discovery and answers all kinds of important questions that carries mankind into new areas of protectiveness, new areas of security. Chlorophyll. What the heck is chlorophyll now? Remember that? Everything had chlorophyll in it. You could get chlorophyll. You could get chlorophyll popsicles. You could get chlorophyll bumper gum. They had chlorophyll boards. They had everything with chlorophyll. Where's all the chlorophyll? Where's it all gone now? You remember a couple of years ago when one big advertising agency with the banners flying and the band playing, and somehow it becomes an American thing. Americans are pushing back the frontiers of ignorance. You remember when this outfit said, once again, America stands on the threshold of new discoveries in teeth cleaning, the new liquid toothpaste. Remember that liquid toothpaste? I knew a guy that drank four bottles of it and went out of his skull for a month. The best thing, I believe it was the best thing since Smirnoff. Little old ladies would be standing over their sink hiccuping. And where is it now? Where is it now, really? Do you remember the liquid toothpaste? I will award you a brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm if you can even tell me the name of this liquid toothpaste. They had giant radio shows. I even think they sponsored at one point Bob Hope or somebody like that. Big deal they were on. You remember that? Holy smokes. Now, why do I have a mind that retains that kind of crud? I cannot remember any algebra. You come to me and you ask me what the date of the war of 1812 was fought in. I'm likely to say 1798. I just don't remember the name of that toothpaste. And why? Well, I'll tell you why. My mother brought home what they call the large family-friendly hospital size. This was the 7-gallon size that was selling for 2 cents off at our local friendly A&P, you know, the big jug of this stuff. And it was bright red. And she brought this stuff home and set it up because she, you know, she listened to all the radio shows and all. She loved all that stuff. She bought every new wash day discovery that came along. That's why she had such big knuckles later. The stuff soaked the skin right off of her ears, you know. And she brought this big jug of stuff home, set it up on the little shelf over the sink there. And every morning we were supposed to do the stuff with the toothpaste, you know, with the teeth and all that. And I had this little toothbrush. And so about the third or fourth morning, I discovered this stuff tasted really great. Not only did it taste great, somehow it tasted great, you know. It tasted better than candy. It had a little pizzazz, you know. Wow. So I took to sipping toothpaste, liquid toothpaste. I would come in here like that, see. Of course, it was the first toothpaste to come out that was 40 proof. And I suspect that later on, all the liquor authorities got after him. In fact, I know that later on they had to get a liquor license to sell that toothpaste. But it was a great toothpaste while it lasted. Now, the point I'm only trying to make here is that there was a giant brouhaha about that. And they had it in all the store windows. And they had the big signs, you know, that says, "It's here at last. Full supply, stock, no waiting." You know, that kind of thing. Where is it now? It's like in about 3 months, there's going to be a lot of guys stuck with a heck of a lot of unsold skateboards. You know? And there's going to be a lot of people are going to wonder what to do with that doggone thing. You know, what are we going to do with the thing? He says, why don't you take the wheels off and make something out of it? Put it under the coffee table or something. And how, it's just like, you know, wouldn't you like to have a closet full of your previous nuttinesses? You know, you have a full collection, a full decorator, a shade, the whole 7 colors of hula hoop. They're all back there. You have your, you have all the records that you thought were fantastic at the time and you can't stand them now. You had to go out and buy it immediately. You know, like the Andrews Sisters doing the Song of India. You had to go out and buy that. Now you got this monstrosity hanging around. and it's funny though, when people buy something at the time, you know, something that really, it comes along and it hits like a bomb, a big shell, they have the feeling that this thing answers a real, genuine void. It answers a real void in their life, and they've got to have this thing. I just wonder how many houses have got guitars in them that are stuck back in the closet there behind the inner tubes. You know, and the overshoes, and they keep bugging you. You see it back there in the shadow. It keeps looking at you. If only they made this stuff so that it was dissolvable. In other words, if all the Beatle records would dissolve after the Beatle craze is over, so that people wouldn't be reminded how silly they were at one point, life would be a lot easier, seriously. If all the hula hoops somehow dissolve, but you know, down on 2nd Avenue, way down around 8th Street, where they've got all these junk shops, they had a pile of hula hoops down there the other day that was head high. They were selling them for 7 cents, and nobody was buying. Nobody was buying. And so you can probably buy somewhere in a warehouse, there must be jugs and jugs of liquid toothpaste. Unsold. Gathering dust until the next agency catches a hold of it and sells it all over again. It will start. It will begin and take off. Because, you know, are you aware that skateboards are not new? Do you know that skateboards had a are you aware that they had a giant craze? The skateboard had a big craze in the 20s? You aware of that? And they used to call it, at that time, a guy wrote me a long letter about it, and he worked in a factory where they made them. And he said, in those days, they used to call them roller skateboards. Now, the reason that they sold a lot of them now is because somehow, magically, they have tied in the roller skateboard with surfing. It has no relationship whatsoever to do with surfing in any way, shape, or form. But people who buy roller skateboards think somehow they're connected with surfing. And I'm sure, and had nothing to do with surfing whatsoever. And I'm sure that a guy one day in about 10 years who's got a warehouse full of 18 million hula hoops is going to somehow say, look, the hula hoop idea is all over. Let's see. I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's call it terrestrial parachute jumping. Yeah, we'll call them parachute rings. And the guy who has a hula hoop going around him is pretending he's parachuting. See, you're going like that. You know how you swing back and forth when you're on a parachute? Sure, your guy swings back. I got it, Manny. We'll call them para rings. That's what we'll call it. And we'll get the rock and rollers to sing, I got my para ring, baby. I got my para ring, baby. I'm jumping, jumping for you. I got my para ring, baby. My para ring, baby. And see, and sure enough, there will be 18 million people who are pretending that they're parachute jumping in their ex hula hoops. And it's all part and parcel of that finding the hook. Finding the thing upon which you can swing, and then you can go all the way. That's called the weenie. Are you aware that in writing terms it's called the weenie? Another word for the weenie is the gimmick. And if you can convince a guy that he's better off using liquid toothpaste instead of toothpaste that squirts, you've got the weenie going. If you can convince a guy that he's better off chewing chlorophyll than, say, chewing mint, you got the weenie going. If you can convince a guy that he's better off getting his arm broken on a skateboard than getting it broken in a Volkswagen or getting it busted jumping off of a diving board, then you got the weenie going. That's called the weenie or the hook. And in fact, the words, there's many words for this, you know, Tony. One of them is called the gaff. What's the gaff? Now, do you know what a gaff is in fishing, friends? Have you ever seen a gaff hook at work? A gaff is a long spear with a hook on it. And when the fish comes high enough to the surface, they stick it in his gill and pull him right out of the water. That's the gaff. Well, what gaffs are working on you? Speaking of the gaff, do you have another little whoopee in there for us, Tony Boy? There he comes. All together, gang. Now let's go. Let's sing it out. Oh, it's summer on its way. Millions of vacationing Americans will be touring the country. There's one familiar friend waiting for you wherever you go. It's the one true premium beer. Sparkling, flavorful, distinctive Miller High Life. You know, when you order Miller High Life in Sacramento or Seattle, it's the same premium beer served in Syracuse or Atlanta. Miller High Life in bottles, cans, or on tap is brewed to perfection in one brewery, only in Milwaukee. Miller, can you imagine a poor guy whose only friend is a can of Miller High Life? Wherever you go. Miller High Life is enjoyed in all 50 states and in more than 50 foreign countries. Miller High Life is waiting there, ice cold, waiting to welcome you, waiting to help you get bombed out of your skull. Miller High Life, your one friend. Press with hands. Bring it up, Tony. Times, Rudy too. And tomorrow night, speaking of your one friend is me. Let's face it, I'm the only guy you can rely on. I never yell at you. I never stick my hand out. I'm never putting the bite on you. I never come up to you with my eyes all wrinkled and say, oh, come on, you just understand me once, will you, Mabel? Never once. And so if you would like to join me, we will play Ring Around the Rosie tomorrow night at the Limelight. Oh, it's lovely. It really is nice. This is a great song. What would you say? Now, you're an engineer. I'm going to ask you a question. Just listen carefully and give me an estimation, since you've heard a lot of sounds in your life. What is the frequency, the resonant frequency, roughly, of this particular jew's harp? Listen. Now, that's the natural note of this jew's harp. What would you say? Huh? Give me the phone there. What is it? What would you say roughly, Tony? I'm curious. Yeah, in cycles. 50 cycles? Is that low, huh? What would you say the key of it is? Or don't you know? B flat? Very good. All right, we'll allow you musical types out there to throw this on your scope. Try a couple of listed you figures on my jew's harp here. Good. All right, now. Lovely. Lovely. Just beautiful. Isn't it, though? There's something about that instrument that brings, well, it just brings it into the eyes there. That just, you can see those old ladies watering up there. And how would you like a little hymn for those of you? It's hymn time out there. How about, would you care for Bringing in the Sheaves? Or perhaps... What was that one? You know that one? All right, how about... Okay, very good. So, tomorrow night, we will be at the Limelight. And for those of you who've wondered, for those of you who would like to experience a little of the rich, true elixir of life, to sip deeply at the springs of existence and life, that's we will be at the Limelight tomorrow night down on 7th Avenue in Greenwich Village. Lovely old historic Greenwich Village. And you come straight down 7th Avenue, which is one of the most beautiful thoroughfares of Manhattan. Take the scenic route right through Chelsea. Historic, lovely, old Chelsea. You drive right on down over beautiful 14th Street, which, as all of you know, is one of the garden spots of Manhattan. Drive over 14th Street. Look to your left, and you'll see Louis' pool shop, pool room right there. It's upstairs. And if you look behind those screens, yes, these are all the things that you can see on your way down to the Limelight. And as you get into Sheraton Square, this Sheraton Square, by the way, I'll award you the brass fig leaf if you can tell me what Sheraton it's named after. Here's a clue. It is not named after a general. Huh? No, it's named after a Corporal Alfred Sheridan. Al Sheridan, as a matter of fact. No, there's a long story about that. We don't have time to tell you about that. But we will be at the Limelight beginning at 10:05 on Saturday night, Whoopee Night. All of you are looking for a good, cheap place to go to, you know, sit there and pretend like you're digging culture and all that stuff. And, you know, they've got a bar Z and everything. We'll be there from 10:05 until midnight. And it's for just everybody. Oh man, and incidentally, if they tell you they don't have that they don't have any seats, you just push your way past. You just push your way past, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tell you what I'll do tomorrow night for the benefit of those of you who can't get in before the show. How about it? Before the show at 9:30. How about that? Let's make a whole thing at 9:30. I will be outside the Limelight, and all of you can come. We'll stand around and holler and yell, and holler at Kelsey to quit watering the beer, at you know, the whole scene. You want to do that tomorrow night? All right, I'll be down in front of the Limelight tomorrow night at 9:30. We will pick at the Gene Shepherd Show for being unfair, since it does not allow single-minded minor klutzes to come in without paying a tariff, okay? Oh, hey, did you throw an echo chamber in there on me? That's great. That's great. Oh, fantastic. That's the way. Can you see Phil Spitalny and his magic Jew's harp choir? Thank you. that's lovely. That's enough to make your skull burn, isn't it? Get your old teeth. Hey, you know, speaking of burning the skull, this is Friday night, you know. How much time do we have, baby? Do I have time to tell the terrible debacle of a Friday night that I once suffered through in the Army that just, oh, it was just an incredible night? Or should I save this for the limelight tomorrow night? Shall I tell you the awful chicanery, the terrible story of Effie's ploy, which I later, shall I tell you this thing? No, I better not. You know, speaking of telling stories, it's a funny thing. I truly believe that almost all fiction writers, almost everybody who writes any kind of fiction isn't really not writing fiction at all. I think what he's writing is the story of his life in one form or another. I really mean that. Unless the guy is working in the area of true fantasy. In other words, if I am, if you're Jules Verne and you're writing about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or something like that, that's fantasy. But I suspect what we call fiction is in almost every case autobiography. In one form or another. In fact, I've known a half a dozen guys, friends of mine, who have written novels, you know, Tony, and plays, and it's really their life. And everyone says he's a great fiction writer. Now, I will also further submit this to you, that the closer you approach to reality, the more people will think you're writing fiction. Until eventually, the guy that who really is writing reality will be called a true fiction artist. On the other hand, the guy who generally writes what we call classical biography or autobiography is generally the true fiction writer. He's hooking it up all the way. He's covering up and dusting stuff under the carpet, and you know, he never tells you all the real stuff. And the reason I thought about this is that I have been writing for Playboy. Now, my pieces in Playboy are as much fiction, I will submit to you, as say J.D. Salinger's reminiscences about, let's say, Holden Caulfield and Catcher in the Rye. Because, after all, he did go to a military school himself. He did run away and all that. So is it autobiography or is it fiction? Well, the point that I'm getting at is that I wrote a story for the July issue of Playboy. Now, it's coming out this coming week. And it's the July issue, and it is an exact, almost a word-for-word, an exact description of an actual event that actually occurred when I was a kid. Well, I am talking to the editor of Playboy, and he is saying, and by the way, he's the fiction editor. So he says to me, he says, well, of course, he says, all you fiction writers, we're lumping you up. Well, we've got a special thing for your fiction. I says, fiction. Well, then I began to wonder, where does fiction stop and where does history begin? Where does it stop? You know that down south, they have an entirely different version of the Civil War than we've got up north in all the history books, in all the high schools. Are you aware of that, Tony? Well, are the guys that are writing that history book fiction writers? Or are the guys that write it up here fiction writers? Who knows, you know? you go to England, and you know that they have an entirely different... Are you aware that the English version of the American Revolution... is very different from ours? And who do you think the big hero of theirs is? Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold is one of the greatly admired heroes of the Revolution. And so, you know, you don't know which way to turn. Which way to turn? Ah, but it is Friday, and you'll find a way to turn. And we will be at the limelight tomorrow at 10:05, just waiting to be cut off by Ted Malley, just as we hit the point of our story. So they can come on, say WOR and WORFM, the RKO General family of stations. The station that's devoted to good works. The station that's devoted to good practices all the way down the line. In hocks, good. Yes, indeedy, Mo. Keep your knees loose, Pappy, and keep those thumbs oiled.